We have an amazing show tonight and an amazing author to share with you. We have Amalia Karras, author of Synchronicity, Unlock Your Divine Destiny. She's the founding director of Know the Self, a mystery school for modern day living, in which she guides truth seekers to access their innate wisdom. She's helped thousands worldwide to liberate their minds and navigate expanding realities and establish sustainable lifestyles and live out their divine destinies. Her website is knowtheself.com. And she has the title of her book is one of my favorite subjects of all times. So, Amalia, welcome to the show. Are you there? Oh, she's probably muted. Amalia, if you unmute your microphone, we can hear you. Okay, Deb. I'm pretty sure I'm unmuted.
You're unmuted. She should be unmuted unless she's got herself muted.
Okay, you can hear me. We can't hear you, though. Might want to check your settings and make sure that Skype is letting your microphone be heard, because it isn't to this point in time. Hopefully she can struggle through some of this. Her title of her book is Synchronicity, and synchronicity is one of my favorite subjects because it's something that all of us experience all the time, yet most of us don't always acknowledge the little insights that the universe gives us. And it's those little insights, those little pushes, those little coincidences, if you will, that help us to follow our pathway, follow our destiny, and sort of stay the true course towards where we are supposed to be. Synchronicity is... It's an amazing word, and it means so many different things to so many different people. But basically, synchronicity is when things just fall into place, when things just sort of fit like magic, and you can't believe that they are happening the way they are. It is probably one of the most exciting things to happen when the universe decides to shovel a ton of synchronicities on you, and you have to flow with it because there's absolutely nothing else that you can do. And well, I experienced this with my late husband, Patrick Cook. And since she is trying to get into the show, I will take this opportunity to tell again my amazing story. I was doing a nightlight show on UFOs back in 2000. I was doing a nightlight show on UFOs and interviewing an author that spoke of instances that had been authenticated. And one of the instances was one that I happened to be at. And I don't really do UFO stuff that often, or I didn't do it that often. And so it was very unusual for me to, at that point, talk about UFOs. And there was someone in my chat room that kept saying, I'm an expert in the field. I know what, you know, I know all about your topic. Pull me in, pull me in, pull me in. But my author was, you know, kind of one of those people that you don't pull other people in on, but he had to leave early. So I pulled Patrick onto the show with me. And we talked about UFOs and synchronicities, and because he was on the paranormal channel, I was on the spiritual channel, and as far as he was concerned, the two just never connected or didn't go together. So it was a unique thing for him to be kind of cruising around and find my show, and then come into the chat room and be able to want to talk to me about the topic I was talking about. And after the show, he sent me a letter and he said he'd like to talk to me further. And that began a conversation that lasted for 7 or 8 months. And it came to the point where we were talking on the phone for probably 12 to 18 hours a day. It was very intense. We decided that yes, we had a connection and that we were we had something between us. There was a link. Are you back, Amalia?
I am. Can you
Okay.
hear me?
Yes, I can. I let me finish my
Oh, okay.
story
Oh, go
and I will we will go into your synchronicities. So
ahead.
anyhow, Patrick and I decided that we there was something here that we wanted to pursue. And so after 7 months of just talking on the phone, I flew to San Francisco. He met me at the airport with his van packed with everything he owned and his three cats, and our first date was driving 3,000 miles across the country. He moved in and we became involved in some megaliths that are around here, the stone walls, the stone chambers. We created a video that we presented at Megalithomania. And after he'd been here for about 7 months, we decided he said, I can't find a card for Valentine's Day, so let's get married. And we did. Everything fell into place. There was no way that you could in any way have put the two of us together. If you knew the two of us, you would never have put us together. And yet we fit and we work together almost magically. And sadly, he did pass away 3 years after he moved in. But it was one of those relationships that everybody just shook their heads at and said, I don't know how that happened, but isn't it magical? And it was indeed magical. It was a synchronicity that was just absolutely amazing. So when I saw the title of your book, I thought, okay, not only can I relate to synchronicity as it with big things in my life, I talk all the time about the little synchronicities that the universe, the spirit sends us that we need to be aware of to help us keep us on our pathway. So how did you flow into this wonderful energetic field of realizing what the synchronicities are, and how did you come to write this amazingly lovely book?
It's a long story, but I'll try and give you the synopsis of it. I mean, as a little girl, I was raised Christian, so I prayed a lot, and I noticed my answers to prayer through synchronicities. And when I was about 17 years old, I started traveling. I first went to England for sort of a study abroad program in college, and then decided to like keep traveling and did that for a few years. And I allowed synchronicity to just be my guide because in many cases I didn't speak the language, I didn't have much money, and it was just this way that I knew God spoke to me or the universe or some other force that kind of opened pathways for me. So I would just follow these gateways. It always felt like magical doors opened when I allowed synchronicity to be my guide. And so since I didn't really have much adult supervision or guidance in my life, I was left to be, pretty much raise myself and do my own thing. In order for me to kind of trust that there was something larger, I just had this way of interacting with the universe through synchronicity. And then to come to write the book, I found that because my life has been such a series of ever expanding synchronicities, and I have a lot of stories around it, people were just drawn to me to ask me questions about it. And year I wrote the book, I was actually writing a different book, and many people kept calling me nervous about synchronicity. They had all these questions about synchronicity. Some of them were scared of it, like it was getting too strong, and they didn't know what it meant, and so they were trying to you know, think that they were either bad omens or it was just too intense and they wanted to slow it down. And then the next phone call from another client would be like, I used to have this magic and this magical touch and now it's disappeared. And then the next one would just be this dilemma of trying to figure out the complex puzzle of the synchronicities. And so I realized, huh, maybe I actually found myself in 1 week's time having about seven conversations about it. And I was looking for the title of my book and thought, you know what, this is actually all about synchronicity. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the energy has changed and everyone is experiencing amazing awakenings. And because of that, they have greater sensitivities to seeing the synchronicities and not really understanding them. And it is important to understand that it's your higher consciousness giving you messages and helping to guide you into new realities. And trusting that guidance is not an easy thing for a lot of people.
Mm-mm. Not at all. I mean, and then there's the decoding of it. So some people, myself included, you know, when a synchronicity happens, you just kind of think, oh, that means yes, because it's synchronistic. So you kind of make synchronicity mean yes. It doesn't always mean yes. You know, like it doesn't always mean go forward, keep going. Sometimes it can be a warning it can be more complex. So decoding synchronicity isn't always very easy, and it can make you feel like a mad person when it's happening so fast. You know, and a lot of like from complex dreams to then waking dreams and things like that, it can get a little bit complicated, but it is a way of interacting with our multidimensional nature. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really exciting about it.
Well, and when we are talking synchronicities here, for many people would call them coincidences. And I have found that as I get older, I do notice them more frequently now than I did in the past. But I'm still one of those that needs to have, and you had another word for it, but I call it the 2x4 in the face. You know, when I will see the hints, I will see the synchronicities, I will recognize that there is a shift and a change in direction, but there is a part of me that is reluctant to make a major shift or a major alteration if I don't really get something major. So I am sure that it's not my ego talking. And so usually I acknowledge them, I write them down, but I just say, you know, I need a little more information. You know, a telegram would be nice, but you know, just give me a little more information. And then I'm usually hit in the head with something, you know, so profound that it's like, oh, okay, why didn't you just say so? And, you know, and when I go back in my journal and I look at the synchronicities, it's all there. It's, you know, it's kind of like, how many times did we have to tell you that this is something you should be doing instead of what you're doing at this moment in time? But I have been a 2x4 in the face for my entire career in this field. And it though I recognize the little cute, you know, synchronistic things that happen, I still am at a point where I trust it, but I want to make sure that because I do feel that a lot of people in this field do exactly what you said. You know, they get a hint and they go off on it half cocked and they end up having to go back to square one again. And frankly, I didn't like square one. So if I can avoid going to square one, I'm going to avoid it. If it takes a 2x4, it takes a 2x4.
I totally understand. Yeah, I call them course corrections or massive course corrections because, you know, our intuition gets stronger as synchronicity increases, or I don't know which one comes first, but when we experience a lot of synchronicity, our intuition is getting really well trained. And it's hard to base all your decisions on your intuition and synchronistic events when we've been totally programmed to think analytically and logically and do what is appropriate or, you know, societal norms. And a lot of messages that come synchronistically take us into wild territory. So yeah, you should make sure. I know for myself, at one point I reread all the journals I had written since I was 6 years old. And I was about 33 when I did that. And I could see, you know, that's a lot of journals. And I could see the same message again and again and again, but I had never reread my journal. I just kept writing the same message again as if I had amnesia. And I thought, you know, what's it going to take for me to like really listen to what my soul is trying to tell me I'm here to do? But it's just sometimes it's too scary and we're just not ready, and it takes something like, you know, those of you who've read my book, like My House Burned Down, it takes something like that sometimes for me to really change course and do what I had been hinted about very kindly and nicely in my meditations and in all the synchronicities that unfolded, like, oh, I should move out of the city. I should really go to the woods. But until my house burned down, I didn't do it.
That was a major 2x4 moment.
Yes.
Well, I think the first 2x4 moment that I recognized was I had been I've been in the field for about 50 years, but I taught school for 26 years. And people kept saying, you should do this full time. And I kept saying, when I retire, I will. Mm-hmm. But the salary and the pension and the, you know, health insurance and everything, I can't give that up. I have bills to pay and a son to put through college. And I kept saying, when I retire, I will do this full time. And I guess that's something a hint to give to people. When you say you will do something when you retire and the universe wants you to do something else, the universe, honest to goodness, will fix it so that you retire early. I was in a major car accident and forced to retire early, forced into early retirement. And so that if you know you're not going in the right direction, but you're reluctant to make a change, make sure how you talk and how you talk about it, because if the universe really wants you to move in a direction, the universe will make it possible. And the universe doesn't think about things like comfort and salary and security. The universe just knows it wants you in a certain direction. And if you don't flow there naturally, it will make arrangements for you to be in that direction. And often these are times where it's like, you know, it doesn't, I think on the other side, they really don't think about paychecks and paying bills and mortgages and things like that. They just know that your spirit needs to be in another place and they arrange for you to get there. And and it's sort of like, if you take the hints ahead of time, you don't have the major shift when the universe takes over.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it takes most of us a major shift. I mean, even what's ironic is even after a major shift, like a car accident or the house burns down, like how many people still try and go back to their old life? Because that's all we know. That's the ego sort of grasping for this old way of being. When I feel that what's happening is the soul awakens to its own memory of why it came here on this mm-hmm. planet. And there's a timing and a certain configuration of like, okay, like we've told you, we've warned you, you know, we're telling you again and again and again, okay, you're not doing it. So we have to redirect your path completely so that there's no other choice.
Well, that's what happened. I did try to go back.
Yeah, everyone does. It's weird. Me too.
I tried to go back and they made sure that physically I was not capable of going back into the classroom.
That's what happens.
And I was forced into early retirement, kicking and screaming because...
Why do we do that? And someone like you and me, who, you know, have been in this work for a long time, we still do that, kick and scream.
Oh, it was... And well, let me tell you how even bad it was. I lived with my mother, and a single parent child, and you know, my son was in college, so I was putting putting my son through college, and she said to me, you know, well, I can put a roof over your head, food on the table, but I can't pay your bills. And I said, well, neither can I. And so I sat there with the school system fighting me on stuff, because I had over a year's sick leave. So I was really just covered, but they stopped the sick leave and the bills, the bills amounted to a great deal. And at one point somebody said to me, they called me on the phone and said, well, you know, you're disabled. You have disability insurance. Did you ever think of claiming on it? And I said, I only paid one payment. I'm pretty sure it doesn't cover this. And they said, well, yeah, it does. And they filed the paperwork and it covered it. And I got a check for, I think, $5,000 it was retroactive to when the car accident was. And it helped a great deal. And my mother said, okay, so you're going to go back to work and do readings? And I said, no, if they want me doing readings, they've got to equal my paycheck, because I can't. I just can't afford to do readings, and I don't feel right about it. And so about 5 or 6 months went by, and someone else said, you ever think of applying for disability? And I said, I have a job. Why would I apply for disability? And they said, because you can't work. And I went in and they said at the disability office, well, you know, it usually takes a year and you're usually turned down. And I said, I understand that. They just told me to apply. And here I am. And I gave them all the paperwork and I went home, and my mother said, well, and I said, I'm going to get turned down. This is ridiculous. It was silly thing to do. Well, 2 weeks later, I was approved. And I got a check for retroactive to the accident, which was another $5,000. And my mother looked at me and said, all right, now, are you going back to work? And I said, no, I'm not, because I can't live on, you know, these two checks. They just don't equal the paycheck. It doesn't make it viable. And, you know, she said, you're turning my hair gray. And I said, it was gray already. Give me a break. about 4 months later, bills piled up. I got a call and I was forced into early retirement. And so I took their, in order to get me to agree to it, they had to agree to give me my medical and to give me my pension early. And it was retroactive to the time of the accident, another $5,000 check. And when I looked at the three checks that were coming in, to the dollar, they equaled my last paycheck. I said, now I go back to work.
Now, Very good.
So, you know, but it took that to convince me that if the universe was going to work that hard, there must be something here for me to do. And so that was 30 years ago.
Well, that's the thing with your soul mission, is that no one else can take your place. It's only your job. So the job's always going to be there for you, whether you take it now or later. And sometimes I think we need to increase our conviction. Like, the synchronicities have to get so loud, so obvious for our ego, really, the small mind of us that wants to hold on to control, to feel that without a doubt, this is the correct path. That the questions are, you know, put to rest.
Yeah, and the spiritual pathway is you use a term in your book that I love, and you talk about starseed. You talk about the starseed within you. You want to explain what that starseed is?
Yes. So I believe that we carry, you know, within us our potential inside of our hearts. It actually lives in the center of our chest. And when we activate our spiritual nature and we see that we're much more than our human existence, and we start questioning the, you know, why am I here? What is it that I came to do? And those questions start to activate this seed that lives within us for us to wake up to our full potential. And when we bring in what I call vertical alignment, connecting to the planet, to Earth, to the central core of the planet, the consciousness of this Earth, and up to the central sun, which is beyond our solar sun, these two energies create this masculine feminine alchemy that activates and bursts open this seed that lives in our heart, what I call the star seed, because it becomes a small sun and it starts shining out. And when we activate that, we remember our sovereignty. So for me, I got really clear that, you know, I had a lot of experiences of, you know, really strange paranormal activity with other entities, other beings, dark magic coming after me, people trying to, you know, mind control things. And I had a lot of tests where I felt like a victim from a lot of my life until I learned how to activate my starseed. It was the pressure chamber that I needed to reclaim my own power. And so when I activated my own starseed, this sun, this light from the center of my chest, I was able to reclaim my divine inheritance and recall my multidimensional nature. And I feel that that's what's happening right now. People are having spontaneous awakenings. There's a certain level of activation happening on the planet. And people are waking up to this incredible sense of love, of freedom, of joy that sort of comes from the starseed. And they're starting to realize, oh, I came here with a purpose and new information, knowledge that's just innate to who you are. Nothing about what you studied in school or what you were taught, but something that you specifically came here to share gets awakened when that starseed wakes up.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And I think a lot of people who are waking up are going through the dark night of the soul. To me, that seems to almost precede the activation of the starseed. And dark night of the soul is a time in which it's almost like, you know, though you're in a crowd, you're alone and you feel out of sync with the rest of reality. And I know a lot of people either go to a shrink or a psychic when this kind of a thing happens to them because they don't understand that their awareness is expanding. And because of that, the vibration they're sending out is no longer in harmony with the energy around them. And it's a time of coming into a more harmonious rhythm and flow with your environment. And the Bible describes it as dark night of the soul, but to me, it's actually an initiation time.
Mm-hmm. And I would totally agree.
And it's sort of like, and, you know, don't get me wrong, folks, you can't just suddenly, you know, do a 5-minute meditation and flip a switch. This is work.
Mm-hmm. Yes. big work.
But it's so worth it. And your book leads people through and gives them exercises as to how to pull them into harmony and alignment. And it's really 7 steps or 7 keys. And it does give people a deeper understanding as to how can they come to this time of awakening without going through the misery of dark night of the soul. And you might do that anyhow, but at least you'll have a better understanding of what it is you're experiencing.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad you brought up the dark night of the soul. And these keys that I'm sharing in my book are what I learned in my dark night and how I traversed it. And the initiations of the dark night, for me, they lasted 9 years. And every time you know, I still have these miniature Dark Night of the Soul experiences, but my tool set and activating my starseed helps me move through them with tremendous speed. But in that process of initiation, we never really arrive anywhere, right? I mean, it's just further and further stages of growth. And I like to see it like I look at it like a tree, you know, and it grows into these, next year, another ring forms and another ring forms. And each one of those rings that it moves out, your consciousness expands. There's a level of initiation that you need to go through in order to hold that level of light and frequency through your vehicle. And it hurts. It's like a growing pain. And until you pop into the next ring, you have this pressurizing. And to know how to do vertical alignment, which is one of the keys offered in the book, exercises there, and really activate the starseed, you're able to find zero point and find the eye of the storm, so that when you're going through them, you can see with, you know, open eyes and see through time and space as to what you can witness it more and not be so attached or thrown around with the pendulum swing of the, you know, when you have an awakening, we all go through these phases of like feeling, you know, like Jesus Christ, Buddha, superstar, to feeling completely beaten and abused and on the floor in a victim mode, you know, so the pendulum can swing so big from elation to horrifying terror. And the exercises I share in this book are how to keep you centered, even though that polarity swing might still be happening as you wake up to greater understanding of how the universe operates. You can still stay poised and in the center and hold on to your power.
Well, yeah, in a way you become your own life preserver.
Exactly. And that's, we are here to save ourselves. No one's coming to rescue us.
That's another very, very important point. And we come into every incarnation with all the tools necessary. And so many people say, well, the answer's inside you. The answer's inside you. That's true. But you have given them charts, and you have given them ways of helping to identify their tools and to sort of procedures to become familiar with the tools that they can use, so that it's and it doesn't happen overnight, folks. It really doesn't. It's a growth process. And basically what you're doing is you're birthing a cosmic consciousness. And any birthing process can be difficult. Having been in labor 72 hours with my son, I frankly, I wouldn't repeat that for anything. I'll take a couple years work instead.
Yes, but it is bloody and messy and horrifying at times.
But
the reward is extraordinary.
It is. And what you have done is to give them the tools for putting magic, to activate magic within their lives.
Yes.
It adds a greater vibrancy to life. It adds a greater joy. And it adds greater awareness of all levels. It's just an amazing thing. But this is a way of sort, if you go through this and if you journal and if you do the suggested exercises, it's a method. It's a method, and it's a good one. If you're the kind of person that needs to have structure, this is a very good key. And I love the fact that you named them, there are seven keys. Love the fact that it matches the chakras. I'm sure that was absolutely intentional. And it does feel that as though you've taken them on a journey here through your different keys. That is kind of it's interesting, and it does work. I mean, the first one is to tend your inner garden and activate your starseed, and once that's activated, is it with the first key? I can't remember that you give them the vertical alignment.
I can't remember it. I think it's the second.
Okay.
I start talking about grounding and just sort of some of the spiritual anatomy. These keys are actually what I wished someone had told me before I entered my dark night. I felt like this is such the basic toolkit for everything that I discovered. And I didn't learn them, you know, sequentially. I sort of learned them here, there, and the other. You know, I'd been meditating for maybe 10 years before I activated my starseed, even though my spiritual teacher kept telling me to meditate on the heart and activate this light in the heart. They don't call it a starseed, my teacher, but for me, it was only when I had that experience of it cracking open and turning into a sun, and I kind of turned inside out and became this effervescent light of my own being, did I get the huge aha moment. And I laughed so hard because, you know, there it was for 10 years doing this meditation, thinking I knew what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And realizing in one moment that I hadn't been doing it correctly, or it hadn't happened yet. You know, I was tending the soil, but the seed hadn't sprouted.
Well, what you call your star seed, I call the light body energy. And it, you know, you're absolutely right. We get to the, you know, I have gotten to points in my lifetime where it's like, oh, yeah, now I've got a good grasp on everything. And then I suddenly discover something I had never heard about before. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, now I'm back to square one again, which is exactly where you have to go. And it's an exciting journey, because once you get to a place where you feel really, I tell people I know enough about everything to get in trouble, and I usually do. It's a wonderful journey. It's, you experience magic every day in the most unusual of ways. It's really profoundly interesting and exciting. And so you tend your inner garden, which is, you know, getting to know yourself and connecting yourself and being grounded is probably one of the most important things out there, because if you're not grounded, then you know, magic can happen, but you're going to be interdimensional for sure, and they'll probably put you away for a while. So getting yourself grounded helps you tremendously. And then your second key is get honest with yourself. And that's probably one of the hardest ones to mm-hmm. really work with, because getting honest with yourself is examining yourself and identifying the fact that, my gosh, you're not perfect. Of course, that's why we're here. And you go into some of the universal laws, which I think are wonderful. You sent me, has your book been published yet? Again, republished? You said you were going to...
It's going to be very soon, this summer. You'll be able to get it by print. It's not available. It was on Kindle, and it's at this moment. If anybody wants the book, they can go to my website and email me, and I'll send you an ebook version. But it's in the process of being republished for version 2. I made some edits.
I tried a lot. I tried the links you had in there, and none of them worked. That's why I was asking.
Did you get the workbook? The workbook should still work.
And no, it didn't. You know, I was just curious. I think the fact that you give a workbook is fabulous, because so many people really really want a workbook. They want a journal. They want something to show that they're learning and they're growing and they're evolving. And getting honest with yourself is probably one of the hardest things I think any of us ever do, because, you know, we do things out of habit, and we do things because we think they're right. But being really honest about why we do some things cuts to the core. And sometimes it is hurtful, because you have to look in the mirror, and looking in the mirror sometimes is not a fun thing to do. And yet, when you do, you get past the fact that you've been kidding yourself in some areas, and then you begin to realize that with that knowledge, you change. And your changing internally is what brings you into alignment with cosmic thought, cosmic love, cosmic, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's important to really get to know yourself and stretch yourself in, and you give exercises that help people to do that, which I think is fabulous.
Yeah, and the reason it's so hard to get honest with yourself is because we've been programmed for denial and numbing out. I mean, the way the modern world is designed is to keep you so distracted that you don't even realize what's going on with yourself. Because if you're living in a metro or anything like that, you're being bombarded constantly and you have to go to work and stay busy all the time. Like, we don't have these containers for going deep inside ourselves and being honest. Everybody, you know, how are you? Fine. I mean, we have to fake it all day long. And when you start to wake up to your spiritual nature, you start to the veils thin out and you see all of the lies that we've been told or that we've been carrying or that we've been telling ourselves. And it's that part is really hard. I think that's part of the most challenging part, is to realize, like, wow, we've been lied to, or I've been lying to myself for so long. But once you see it and get over the shock of the truth, then it gets fun, because you're able to then, now you can do something with it. Whereas before, you were just in that denial.
Well, when you realize that from birth, you know, you're taught, your parents teach you survival, and then they say you're supposed to get a career, get a job, be stable, get married, have children, and die. Your teachers teach you what they were told to teach you. Your religion gives you another restriction and theoretically mm-hmm. a foundation, but not necessarily. Your culture as well. And so you get to a point, and most people, you know, in their 30s and 40s decide they either break that mold and begin to follow their bliss, or they, and some very, very few, but some are really where they're supposed to be. But they're, for the most part, we're not, because we've been so conditioned to follow the patterns that have been given us that we think following our bliss is wrong. And mm-hmm. Because of my car accident, I couldn't teach anymore, at least traditionally in a school setting. You know, I taught challenged children. And so, you know, I get to teach now, but in a different way. And it's more fun. And I learn and I grow. And while I loved working with handicapped children, there was something else that, you know, called to me. And I think most people, when they come in, they are pre-programmed with their skills, their talents, their gifts, and their tools. And parents usually, you know, try to honor them, but for the most part, they have to be shoved to the back. And in the 60s, we had the free spirits, the hippies and stuff like mm-hmm. that. They were following a different kind of bliss, but the reality is they were trying to do what made them happy. And mm-hmm. I that's what we're all supposed to do. You know, and there is a sense of responsibility to it to a certain degree too. But if you are following what spirit wants you to do, spirit takes care of you.
Mm-hmm.
And it mm-hmm. does. I mean, I can give you story after story after story of something I wanted to do. I didn't have the money. I thought it was a good idea. I didn't put it on a credit card. I said, nope, if I'm supposed to do it, the money will come in, and the money comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's trusting to the universe to make those choices and decisions for you, instead of, and again, another case of, you know, I'm going to drive this time. I'm going to put this on a credit card, which was inappropriate. I would go to whatever it was and find it totally useless. So, and now I have a credit card to pay off. So it's honoring the spirit within and not being crazy, but I tell people always to trust their gut, except when they've had Mexican food. And of course, not the Mexicans. I don't know what I'd say to them. But the reality is our body and our spirit will let us know what's right and appropriate if we take the time to tune to it and listen to it.
Yeah, and you know, when you say get honest with yourself, you know, a lot of people are honest people, you know, they're good people, and they want to say, well, I am honest with myself. But I have a challenge if that's you listening, who thinks that you're really honest with yourself. Like, do you have time every morning to reflect about your feelings that are underneath the surface? Do you go get silent with yourself? And are you dealing with any type of illness whatsoever, any kind of ailment, any major accidents or anything like that? Because if there's anything that's off-centered or skewed, there's probably some place you're in denial. And there's no judgment in it, because we've been programmed to be in denial. And it takes a lot to stop, get quiet, and get honest with ourselves.
Well, don't you think that each lifetime is a challenge to wake up that part of yourself and to get into synchronicity with the higher consciousness? I mean, you talk about the law of rhythm, which you know is what I love, cosmic laws. So you want to explain a little bit about what the law of rhythm is?
Yeah, it's like finding your flow. So for me, the way I share it in the book is to get in tune with your own rhythm. And when you follow your own rhythm and movements and flow, and to find this tune, this tune that's playing in the airwaves, you can actually move through life like water. You find the path of least resistance. And so I just think it's so beautiful to find a rhythm and a pace. So, you know, we've been trained to wake up at a certain time, to do things in a certain way, and all this structure, but your soul might be in a very, very different rhythm. Sorry, there's a bunch of noise outside, so I'm just going to close my window. Got a little distraction okay. Going on out there. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and everyone has a different rhythm. And I think that that's what makes it hard sometimes, especially if there's a partnership. You know, your rhythm may not be the same rhythm as the partner that you've got, and yet it's your rhythm. And so you have to honor it. And it's hard sometimes to be in relationship with someone whose rhythm is so different than yours. Doesn't mean it's wrong or bad or anything like that. It just means that there has to be consideration for the other person and their journey.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, of course, a cosmic rhythm as well, and there's an earth rhythm, and that's why mm-hmm. it's
seasons and sure. The moon, yeah, all
and
of it.
Especially the earth rhythm, which there's a practice called earthing, where you really reconnect with the heartbeat of the earth mother and synchronize it to your own heartbeat. And once you mm-hmm. do that, then actually, to tell you the truth, a lot of illnesses go away. The Native Americans went barefoot a lot, and they were in constant connection to the earth, and they really didn't have the illnesses until, of course, the Europeans came here and gave them all to them. But for the most part, they were very healthy until they intermingled with those that had lost the connection with the land and the earth. It was really mm-hmm. very sad thing. So
yeah, and when we find like the rhythm of all of the different, first the rhythm of our own soul, so we have a rhythm, and then the rhythm of the earth, connecting to the earth, the rhythm of our day, how we want to move through our day. When we find those rhythms and can harmonize with the frequency, we find ourselves experiencing bliss in the day-to-day, moment-to-moment, because we're not off vibration. We're not, you know, jacking up on caffeine and trying to, you know, sit in front of a computer for 12 hours, because that would not be a natural rhythm.
No. But you know, it's really, it's amazing how people get so locked into their routines that they just can't break away and say, I'm going to take a vacation. I need to just not talk on the phone. I need to be one with myself. And, you know, there's a sense of honoring. We know what we need. We just don't give it to ourselves. And
yeah, that goes back to what I was saying before, getting honest with yourself. So if you have an ailment or any kind of dysfunction in your body, you're probably out of rhythm. Mm-hmm. You've lost your natural rhythm. So getting back to the rhythm of the earth, doing the vertical alignment, which is like your earthing, I call it grounding, but connecting to the heartbeat of the mother and really sinking in and letting your body go into that zero point, that still point, to be recalibrated to what your own natural flow and rhythm is. And from there, you will be able to heal yourself. You'll be able to know. Your instincts will guide what comes next, not your mind.
And not only that, but you will be aware of the synchronicities as they come along to a far greater extent. And you talk journal a lot, and that's something that I constantly tell people to do, to have a journal that is not only for spiritual reflection, but a good recipe if you find one, or listing the synchronicities as they occur within your life. Somewhere you can write things down, because once you, it's important to recognize things, but it's also important to let the universe know that you've recognized them. And if you write things down on a piece of paper, in many ways, you have cemented them into this reality, and the universe can check your journal out when you're not looking and say, ah, oh, she caught that one and she caught that one, but she didn't catch this one. And it helps, for some reason, confirming that you understand something by writing it down gives you a stepping stone to reach to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, journals that are like that can be left around and people can read them or not, because there's nothing in them that would embarrass you or anything like that. My journal is full of a plethora of different things, but it's all important. And because I've committed to paper, I've written it down, it gives me a course to work upon, to sort of reach for. And every now and then I can go back and check something off and say, I did this. So yeah, I don't have as many check marks as I'd like to have, but it's a work in process. And I do believe that everyone can benefit in many different ways. A lot of them in ways that you don't even recognize initially, until things begin to expand and take on a greater vibrancy. And I talk about greater vibrancy so much, because when you go through a process like this, when that star seed or the light body energy is awakened and becomes a part of your everyday life, you see things with greater vibrancy. You see things more clearly. You even see things that are interdimensional if you really work with it. So that it's really a joy to do, but it takes time. It takes honesty. It takes looking in the mirror a lot, and not to check your hair, but just to talk to yourself. It's one thing about having a camera on Skype that I'm very upset with, because usually when I do a Skype call or there's a class with lots of people and everybody has their camera on, you can see everyone's adjusting their hair and making sure that the light shines right on them. And that's why I like radio.
I agree.
But
it's very distracting.
It is. It's terribly, especially because I have cats who love to walk in front of the camera. And this is Nightlight. If you like what you're hearing, click over to the support page and make a donation to help us keep this amazing station up and running. Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com is totally listener supported, from the owner to the hosts to the producers, who we can't live without. To the staff, all are working here because we love the work and are dedicated to putting out quality material for all of you. Be it large or small, every donation is greatly appreciated and helps us all keep on supplying information and material to educate and enlighten that isn't found anywhere else. And for those of you who have been asking when we are going to do another Letter Rip evening, it's next Monday night. We're going to do Letter Rip readings. So get ready to dial in early. Deb's number is the only one that I think works. Is that, and Deb, I can't remember what it is. nine something?
You just do this to get me to talk. 918-707-8787.
And that will be posted on the notices that go out for the show. But there have been a lot of people asking when we were going to do another Letter Rip evening. And so since it's Memorial Day, I'm scooting us ahead a bit, Memorial Day, I figured that it would be a good time, since Deb and I don't have anything to do, that we would do Letter Rip readings. So if you're interested in getting one, next week is the time to do it, because that's when we will be ready to rip. We have Amalia back with us, and we're talking about synchronicity. And one of my favorite topics of all time. And your key three is interesting because it's slowed down to speed up. But it's also the thing that really, really, really talked to me was the reclaim your imaginal realm. Mm-hmm. And the imagination is so important, and the creative talents that we carry there are, to me, what open that spiritual channel and allow spirit to flow into our reality. And so many people ignore or shut down or don't even acknowledge the fact that they have that quality within them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, our imagination has been taken away from us and told that it's not real, that it's a false reality. And actually, our imagination is the screen on which our soul communicates with us, as well as all interdimensional beings. And there's a trick between understanding, you know, when I tell people that, often they say, well, how do I know I'm not making it up? And there is a trick to know if you're conjuring something versus something being received. And it takes time to trust that. And build up that muscle, but the imagination is that screen that shares the other realms with us.
And it is a way of putting and helping to put magic back into your life as well. And so many people, I guess it's partially, you know, you have to grow up and become an adult, and you keep hearing that over and over and over again in your life. And having a vivid imagination is one of those things that they discourage. And I don't understand why, but they do. And it takes the magic out of your life. It absolutely does. And by reclaiming your imagination, by reclaiming that ability,
mm-hmm.
it enables you to enhance your reality greatly. And one of the things that you talk about is that you really do create your reality by your perception of it, that you are in total control. Mm-hmm. And that is something that so many people tend to choose not to claim or look at or become a part of.
Yeah. And I have my theories why it was taken away from us, because it is our a very central sense that we have, just like smell and taste and touch. And, you know, everything that we imagine, if we're creating something, if we're an artist, if we're an inventor, if we're just thinking about a dinner that we want to cook, we have to first imagine it in order for us to then create it. So it is that spark of creation where all things become real after they're imagined. So that's how we can master our realities, by working with our imagination and allowing it to be full functioning again, because most of adults' imagination have been shut down so that you can, you know, go to work and stay in line with societal norms and to not remember why you came here.
You know, but, you know, without your imagination, it's a black and white world.
Mm-hmm.
And imagination puts the technicolor back in it. And
yeah.
It's so exciting to play with your imagination. And that doesn't mean you're not responsible. And I mean, you put it in responsible places, but being able to have fun and to be joyful, I truly believe that the technology of today has taken imagination out of many children's lives. I mean, I'll grant you they go into virtual reality stuff, but there's something not as free-flowing as just letting their imagination run wild with them. They're, in other words, it's someone else's imagination they're playing with.
Yeah.
And to me, letting children tell stories or make up stories. And I mean, I have the first book I ever wrote, and I was 2 years old, and I illustrated it as well. My mother typed it up for me because I couldn't write. But I told the story and we put it into a book, and it was just, it's charming. And I look back on it and I say, well, I stopped writing books when I was two. And I was 40 something before I actually got, you know, my poetry was published. And I'm working on, I think, 5 different books now. So it's, you know, if I get weighted down with one, I just go on to another one until I recharge that energy that was in one place and take it and put it in another place. But so I think that your steps are amazing. And, you know, your fourth key is to find your balance. And so many people just don't pay attention to the fact that quite often they are out of balance, and that it's really important to step back and take a look and put the balance between the physical reality and the spiritual reality, to put the balance between work and play. And I think you had charts for that. You have work charts, worksheets for just about every one of the keys, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I do. Yes. Because I feel like people need to get it at a different level. And sometimes we're visual learners, or we learn. I know I learn from experience. That's why I always have these course corrections, or the 2x4, like you were explaining earlier, because I can only own a lesson when it's ingrained into my physical body. So sometimes writing it out and having that aha moment or seeing it diagrammed help. So I tried to work with all the different ways in which people learn through the book. So there's a lot of multimedia aspects. You can get an MP3 to hear a guided version of the vertical alignment. You can get the workbook and have the charts and all the diagrams that are in the book there, so you can print them out and work with them, or put them in your journal, or keep them near your, you know, meditation cushion. And a lot of practical tools for just like charting your progress. I think, you know, so much of spiritual work is confusing because you don't understand if you're going forward or backwards, or you've gotten yourself in more of a mess when you've opened that door.
Mm-hmm.
This is where journaling and charting and just really understanding that there are ways to map spiritual progress, even though it's very elusive and feels like it's on the other side of the veil. So I like to help people do that and give them as many tools as possible. And also, you know, I have my mystery school where I go deeper with people, but these are the keys that I used for myself because I didn't always have a teacher, and I, you know, found myself, you know, out in the middle of some random village in a different country, really needing to figure out how to move forward. So that's where this collection of keys come from, all the different lessons and learnings and teachings that I've acquired, but that are very practical, like to keep you grounded, because I think when you do open these other doors to other realities and to your spiritual nature, I mean, we exist on multiple dimensions simultaneously. And when you start to see that or have lucid dreaming is normally the first step of waking up to your spiritual nature. It can get a little bit confusing of like which reality is strongest or which one's more true or which one are you going to put all your energy and focus into. And having some practical tools and things to just write down and get your mind wrapped around, I think really helps to keep it simple. So that was cool with the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what actually my website became, my journal. And, you know, as I was interested in something and I researched it, I would put it up and I would put it on my website. And the website, you know, just keeps growing because I keep finding new things to get involved in and new things to expand into and look into. Some things went, you know, some things went overboard and some things, you know, didn't. But it's a matter of flowing with where you're called. And so many people will say, oh, I always wanted to play the piano, but I never got a chance to do it. And it's like, well, what about now?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
If it calls to you, do it. I mean, and there have been things that called to me and I answered the call and they were wrong numbers. You know, it's sometimes the ego gets in the way. I love mm-hmm. to sing. I do not have a voice. I joined choirs because they church choirs because they have to take everyone. And singing is a wonderful way of lightening your spirit. It is an amazing high.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not good, it's an amazing high to just add your voice to it and be happy that there are so many other voices drowning you out that it doesn't matter that you're not on the right key. And so, you know, I did that because I knew that, you know, even with training, I didn't have the capacity to do what I would like to do, but I found a way to do it so that I could experience the high and yet not embarrass my family. So, and I think everybody has those things that they really want to do, but there's nothing stopping them. Mm-hmm. And that's what usually gets to me. You know, I always wish I had. Well, do it now. You're only 70 years old. For God's sakes, you've got a good 20, 30 years left. But, mm-hmm. You know, Grandma Moses started painting in her 80s. And so there's nothing that, if you let the opinion of other people stop you from answering the call that is in your spirit, it's a sad thing.
Yeah.
And so many people... so many people do that. And I think one of the other things is to create, you say create safe boundaries. And I think that's important for us all to know. I mean, just because we're here and we love everyone doesn't necessarily mean that we really love everyone, that there have to be boundaries to our realities.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And I think, you know, the way that we've been raised, you know, I have a lot of theories of why we are raised in certain ways, but, you know, a lot of us have had trauma at very young ages, and especially the birth trauma is the first trauma most of us experience. And mm-hmm. That's when, you know, our fields around our body, our spiritual body, you know, we have these sheaths, the panchakoshas in the Vedic tradition, it's called the spiritual bodies that are around our physical form. Those are still being formed as we grow up. And so, you know, at young ages, these spiritual bodies or our physical body gets wounded and we get these tears in our spiritual body that break down the boundary around our physical body. So if you've had any kind of traumatic wound or illness or abuse, throughout your life, they leave scars on your energetic field that then create holes for energy and darker energies to be attracted to. So when we realize that we're spiritual beings and that we have this spiritual field, energetic field around our body, we can consciously heal that. And that's what I'm talking about, creating a safe boundary. And of course, our boundaries are in our yeses and our noes, and being very clear and having strong discernment with people. But doing it in meditation and creating and restructuring your energetic field is extremely important. It's like the number one healing modality. And for anyone listening who wants to experience it, I actually have a free video on my website right now. If you want to go there, it'll come straight to your inbox. You'll see a short intro about becoming sovereign. But this morphogenetic field around our body, it's so important that we take back the ownership of it. Like, we have dominion of that. And that's how we can really restructure and create a powerful container for our soul and our starseed to activate and take our shape, to take our power back, so that we can really do what we came here to do. You know, a lot of people feel like they've had a hard life, or they don't have enough money, or, you know, all the things that we're challenged with in life. And it can just simply be a tear in your field that literally can be restructured from the inside out.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing that, and your website, by the way, is to, is knowtheself.com.
Right.
And, but I think one thing that so many people take so many classes and so many workshops, and they spend a fortune on evolution of spirit, or, you know, raise the Kundalini or whatever. And the reality is, While all of those are probably very sincere people, the true way of experiencing mastery of this of the life and of the consciousness for this lifetime is individual work that is absolutely free, and you give them you give them a wonderful series of steps. You know, there is a workbook, and It enables them to be able to achieve it in their own time, in their own way, in their own vibration. And I truly believe that so many people are looking for another person to make them a spiritual master. And you know, I hate to say this, I hope I don't break anybody's heart, but once you reach mastery of a level, you have to start another level and go down to square one again.
Yeah,
I mean, it is not, you know, like getting a PhD and being able to put, you know, PhD after your name and just strut around with that. It's level after level after level after level after level, and so it's we're never finished. We're mm-hmm. We are going to travel through time working on these different levels and getting to where we need to be, and What impressed me, what I thought was so cool, was that your website, you call Know the Self, and above the archway to the Oracle of Delphi, in Greek mythology, was not mythology, it was actually there, mm-hmm. was a sign that said to know thyself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most important key. That's the most important thing. When you truly know yourself, then magic happens on all different levels, and it really is profound. One of the other things you said is to, I forget which key it was connected to, but it's one of the things that is that I think is very important, is to surround yourself with positive people.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people don't do that. And I'm not saying slam the door on people either. I'm saying make sure that the people that are closest to you are people that are positive people, that you know, are supportive of you, and that you in turn are supportive of them. To have people around you that are constantly going to say, are you really sure? Do you really think that's smart? You know, or that's a stupid choice, back up and do something else. Those are the kind of people you want to kind of drift away from, and find people that are cheerleaders, because cheerleaders are great people to have around you. And if you happen to, you know, fall to pieces, they will help you glue yourself back together again.
Exactly.
But, you know,
so important.
Those are the people you want, because you will make mistakes. Everybody does. That's why you're here. Briefly sort of talk about what the soul group is, because I think everybody has heard that, but they're not really sure what exactly that means.
Yeah, the soul group is something that I've always felt I belonged to since I was really little, and I didn't understand why my immediate family wasn't a part of it. And that's kind of what took me on this whole journey traveling around the world, was I was looking for my tribe and my people and the other ones like me that knew where they came from and what they were here to do. So I believe that we all come from a soul group of 144 souls that make up a larger, 12 groupings of 144 that make up the 144,000, which is called a monad. And it's like a group mind. The monad has its own consciousness, and it's like a mission. So the people from your soul group have come here with a mission that's compatible to yours, that facilitates it. And we recognize these people because we feel very psychic and connected to them. We feel like we've known them for a long, long time, even when we've met just for a brief moment. There's just this strong feeling of kinship. And some of those soul groups can be from the 144 or from the 144,000, or could be from the smaller group of 12. When you start meeting those that are in your soul group of 12 is when the magic really starts to speed up. And it also is when your evolution of clearing any karmic debts, contracts, pieces of you that need to really get clear for you to fulfill your mission speed up. So it's not that's when a lot of dark night of the souls happen, a lot of initiations. So I wanted to mention that in the book because so many people are waking up quickly and not understanding, when you meet someone from your soul group, there will be a lot of synchronicity. There will be a lot of deep intuitive knowing. And there can be often also a lot of conflict when you get really close to the 12, where you need to, you'll be mirroring each other, you'll find opposites, and you'll need to sort of work out some patterns in your system to get to the next level. And those are really great celebratory moments, although they don't feel like it in the moment. But when you get to the other side, the amount of expanded love and joy and connection that you feel is pretty outstanding.
Oh, definitely. And twin flames, another term you use that I hear people bandied about. What is your definition of the twin flames?
Yeah, thanks for asking that, because that's part of the part of the book that I'm editing right now. I'd heard people use that concept, and it really didn't really mean much to me. But in 2010, I had a series of really unexplained phenomena happen when I met a certain person in my life. And I did some regressions around. I'm a past life regression therapist, and so I have other colleagues, and I asked them to regress me so that I could see the karmic connection to this one particular person, because I was just feeling so triggered, so absolutely beyond anything I'd ever experienced before. And what I found out is that some souls, me and this person came to Earth. We merged energies and split into two. And so what I'm finding is that there are not everybody has a twin flame. And I think there's a misconception. And when you're looking online or searching on this, a lot of people think their twin flame is like, the one romantic partner that's going to fulfill all their needs. And it's a lot more to it than that. And romance is sort of the farthest thing that happens when you actually meet a twin flame. So the twin soul, and there can be triplets, or it's another part of your soul group. So in the group of 12, highly evolved souls who've gathered a lot of light and awareness in previous incarnation, like older souls, they acquire so much light that they start to split into 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. I happen to be one that split into 2, and I have met others that have further split, but most people on the earth at this time are single souls. They have not yet split. So when you meet the other half of your soul, a twin soul, there is a strong polarity, a very strong polarity. So one is the masculine and one's the female. It doesn't mean that you're male or female. It's just the essence of your soul, and we take many incarnations. But when these two souls, twins, come into contact, there's a very heightened magic of synchronicity off the charts, deep psychic awareness, as if that person is you. So it's another aspect of your soul. So you can have conversations and it's understood and heard. But there's also the only reason why twins would come to meet each other in this incarnation is to really clear karma and evolve quickly. So that dark night of the soul thing we spoke about gets exaggerated to burn off anything that's in the way of its full liberation to return to source. So what I've understood about twins is they only incarnate when there's a massive shift going on the earth. So like every few thousand years, they'll have an incarnation. And right now there's a phenomena going on where many twins and quadruples and, you know, triplets, things like that are actually incarnated simultaneously, because there's a grand awakening happening on the planet. And so these twins are helping to shift. So when you've acquired a certain amount of light, your vibration changes the frequency of your entire monad. So say two twins can fully get into a high calibration. And there are ways, I know people who actually measure the soul's resonance, the light frequency of the body. And when someone's vibrate, it's like a scale of 0 to 700. And anything over 500, these souls can start offsetting souls that are below 500. So if you're vibrating at like 500 and above, you have the capacity to offset other souls. And I feel that, you know, when twins come together, it's a test or an initiation or a moment to clear even further for your soul group and for all of those connected in the outer rings. So it's fascinating. I can't say that I know for sure, because anybody can know for sure, because this is all information that comes through meditating and channeling. And, you know, each one of us who gets this information has our own filters and capacities to understand it on the mental level. But every time I learn about this, my mind sort of breaks into a million pieces, and I try and make it as simple as I can, which is why this book is being edited at the moment, because I felt like I needed to make it a little bit more tangible and still correct. But accuracy is, we can't get to 100%, so it's probably... somewhere above 70%, I would say. But
well, if you were perfect, you wouldn't be here. So,
right.
You know, that's the only thing that every now and then I'm enjoying myself so much, I kind of say, you know, I'm so glad I'm not perfect, because it means I have more lessons to learn and I'm going to be here for a while longer. So it is, I think, you know, exciting. But I think your book as it is now, of course, no one can get a handle on it, can get a hold of it. But when should you have it out for the general public again?
Definitely by the fall, but I'm hoping before September. So let's say August is my goal, but I'm hesitant to give a date because Spirit has another idea for me all the time. And that's the other thing, like just listening to, so when it's ready, when people are ready to receive it, when it's ready to be fully released, it will,
in other words,
leave my hands.
In other words, it's Michelangelo's response to the Pope, who said, "When will it be finished?" And he said, "It'll be finished when it's done."
Exactly. That's my response. It'll be finished when it's done. You know, one of the things of waking up is like realizing I have no control over timing when I'm working with my spiritual dimensional self. Mm-hmm. It's like that's been the hardest thing for me to let go of, because, you know, I want to be a woman of my word. And you know, like I said, it's going to be out in September. It'll be out in September. And then I start, you know, breaking myself, trying to get it out. And Spirit's telling me it's not ready yet.
I think one of the most fascinating things of a process like this is that you fold time, you lose time. Time has no relevance to you at all. I know when I created a deck of cards, and I worked full time. I taught school, so I would, you know, up at 8, and I was at school until 3:34, and I would come home and I would paint for 12 hours, and then get up and do it all over again. And it was the most invigorating experience of my life. I never missed a concert for my son or a little league game, and yet time just flew, and yet I didn't need the sleep because I was doing it was a channeling. It was the work was channeled, and it was an amazing experience. And I find that oftentimes if I'm writing something, I lose track of time, and when I stop, I'm not tired, and it's sort of, and if I am tired, then I was using my brain and not my spirit, and I have to go back and redo whatever it was that exhausted me, because if I'm exhausted, then I definitely was at the wrong frequency. But
exactly.
One of the other things that you talk about is be happy for no reason. And I think that's something that everyone should experience, whether or not they decide to do all the keys or anything, but just to be joyful for no reason. And watch people's faces when you bubble over with joy, because so many people forget what it's like to just have fun. I have on my phone, which I'm pretty sure I've turned off for tonight, but when people post, or it's some sort of notice, but it's a wolf whistle, and my phone will emit a wolf whistle at the most inappropriate of times and places, and it never ceases to bring smiles to people's faces. And, you know, it happened in the grocery store one day, and I was walking by this lady and the wolf whistle happened. And she said to me, "Did you hear that?" And I looked at her and I said, "Well, it had to be for you. I know it wasn't for me." And she got a smile on her face that I bet she had for the rest of the day. And it was so easy. And it went, I was in line at the post office, and it went off, and I turned to the man behind me and I said, "Thank you." And he said, "Wasn't me." And I said, "Had to be you. There's nobody else here." And he said, "Okay, you're welcome." And he smiled, and it was so funny because, you know, and it's that kind of an experience or practice or whatever. If you can experience joy and happiness for no reason, just to spread it around a little bit, even if you're faking it to start with, it turns out to be real in the end. And you know, that old saying of do you know, gifts for no reason, or just paying it forward kind of stuff.
Acts of kindness, yeah.
It makes such a difference to the quality of your life.
Yeah, I think, you know, somehow there's this habit of being chronic complainers that has just spread like wildfire. And but at the same time, I see that, you know, and we can get so trapped in that at work, you know, the people that we see every day and habits with our family and friends that we've known a long time. But really creating happiness practices just to keep your energy at a higher level. And a lot of people who wake up, myself included, one of the first things I woke up to is deep empathy. And when you start to feel into the pain of the planet, of the animals, of the children, of the forgotten ones, the ones who have no voices, it can get so engulfing in grief. And we don't want to stay there. we have this whole other side to that's when the pendulum's swinging. And I think when we learn to find balance and to stand in the center, we can have this simplistic state of joy, of happiness in the in-between moments. And this is where having a meditation practice, a gratitude practice, the simple pleasures, looking at things, you know, stopping to smell the flowers and to sit in nature, it really reharmonizes ourselves to our natural state, which is joy.
Well,
that
yeah,
is a natural state.
Mm-hmm. And break your patterns. I know, have you ever gone out and eaten dinner backwards?
Oh, funny.
Eating
having dessert first. And
absolutely.
Then,
if you eat dinner backwards, you have room for two desserts. but just to do that, to change that pattern for one evening, just for the heck of it, first of all, whoever you're eating with, or especially if it's a group of people, I have some friends, and oftentimes we all go out to dinner, and I remember once saying, okay, so today is a backwards day. And they all looked at me, I said, we're eating dinner backwards. And they happily were the kind of people that would roll their sleeves up and get into it. And so we did. And when I tell you that there was so much laughter at that table just because we changed a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes work. It takes recognizing you have patterns and then saying, okay, let's change it just for the heck of it and have fun with it. I mean, you can have fun and it doesn't cost money. And I think that's the thing that I have tried to pound into people's heads, because if you have to pay for it, then there's something wrong. So that you can bring joy into your life. It doesn't cost a thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Any idiot can write a check or flip a credit card out for an amusement park. And that's not the kind of joy I'm talking about. So that, you know, the element of pure and utter joy, going out and dancing in the rain or splashing in puddles or building sandcastles or collecting stones, or I mean, there are so many things that you can do in life that don't cost any money. And that's why, frankly, have you ever noticed that people with the most money are more worried than the people with no money? Now, people with no money are worried too, don't get me wrong. But the reality is, if you have a lot of money, the very first thing you start to do is to worry about how do I protect it and how do I make sure nobody takes it away from me.
Yes.
So having no money is really a better way to go. I've had a lot of money and I've had no money. And I think right in the middle is a really good place to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I understand how having a great deal of money, you don't trust and you're afraid of losing it and what it buys you. But when you have no money, you learn the joy of not having anything. And, you know, aside from the fact that, you know, people, you know, you know, are after you for paying your bills and stuff like that. That's no fun. But right in the middle is a great place to be, because that means you have the ability to put the joy in your life and mm-hmm. and have fun with it, and not the pressure of you know, the having to meet the taskmaster at the door. So it's exactly. It's a great place to be. You talk also about, and I think it's appropriate, you talk about having a mentor or a person you can go to for guidance if you need it, and finding someone that you feel comfortable with to counsel you if the moment arrives. And I think everybody, and it can be a friend, or it can be a therapist, or it can be a minister, or it can be a you know, it can be anybody. But having someone that you can go to for counseling when you need it is very important, and everybody needs it at one point in time to another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're in such a culture of everyone wanting to be self-sufficient and do it themselves, and to a degree that's fantastic. And I think, yes, we do need to do a lot of things ourselves, and, you know, our spiritual practice, and we need to save ourselves. But there are things where we need support, we need community. And the way our Western world has been raised and structured is to keep us really separate from each other. You know, now they don't even like people gathering in public places. You know, everybody's in their individual homes watching the television and not really communicating or socializing. You know, we're using social media, and not many people like get out in person and interacting. And we really need that. It's a base level need for our health and our emotional health, our spiritual health, our physical health. And it's not talked about a lot. You know, we've lost many religions, which, you know, the churches used to be something, and now that's, you know, been demystified. People don't want to go to church. Then we all of our leaders have abused us, so we don't like leaders. And so we slowly have separated ourselves and placed ourselves against each other. But for anyone listening who's feeling alone and disconnected and doesn't know who's their tribe or their soulmate or how to get help, there is this workbook that Barb's been mentioning in the book that you can download to help you designate. Because, you know, just by asking certain questions, I can guarantee there are ways and people out there, they might not be in your local community, but that can understand you exactly where you are, can give you the next little lift up and support and help. And that's the one beautiful thing about technology and online communities. But there's a worksheet in there to help you really designate who those people are. And maybe it's people you know that you just didn't realize, and you can start honoring them. I know for myself, it wasn't until my spiritual teacher died that I realized he was my teacher. I just thought he was a great friend. He was definitely a type of family member. He was teaching me how to meditate, but I wasn't in the mindset that I was looking for a spiritual teacher. I didn't recognize him and revere him as such while he was alive. And it took him passing that I realized what an outstanding person he was and how much he actually had gifted me. So sometimes we don't know that, you know, the person next door, our buddy or that elder that we like to chat with down the road is actually this great person who's there to guide us and really help us. So sometimes just recognizing them can get us that next level of boost and evolution that we're looking for.
Speaking of next level, you do have a new book that you're going to be bringing out shortly as well.
I do. It's called Rebirth and Renewal, and it's a transformational guidebook, and it's to really help people who are in the midst of a dark night of the soul or who are dealing with massive change and need to reboot everything. And it's actually a journal you write inside the book itself. There's a ton of work and stories and practices to align yourself to the cycles and rhythms of nature.
Wow. Well, I think, again, one of the most helpful things about your books is the fact that you do have the worksheets, you do have the workbooks, so that people can really work through the process themselves and understand the different things that you're talking about. I think it's an amazing, it's an amazing and it's a magical experience, and I highly recommend it because it does help you to do the work on yourself so that you don't. And there are times when we need to reach out to other people and just be reminded that we're not crazy and stuff like that. So that understanding that that's appropriate to do, to you know, say to someone, have I gone over the edge or is this just part of the whole plan? And 99% of the time you haven't gone over the edge. You haven't even found the edge yet, but it is, I think that's one of the most rewarding parts of doing the work that I do is that you can confirm to people that they're on the right path, that yeah, they're going through a dark night of the soul, but they're almost at the end and they've done an amazingly wonderful job. And, you know, often you get really looks of, you know, you've got to be kidding me. And then when you talk about it, they understand that they have realized that they are able to go through something like this and find positive things that they've learned and then apply them to their reality. And that's what the whole thing is, a rebirthing, a phoenix rising, letting go of what doesn't work and holding on to what works for you and then being open for more things to come to you. It's a very important process. And those people that go through the dark nights of the souls come out. So I keep hearing Barry Manilow's "I Made It Through the Rain," and that to me has always been a song that talked about going through the dark night of the soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for people who are looking for community, one thing that happens, you know, when we go through our dark night, it's normally no one around us understands it. There's no realization that you're in this spiritual process, and your family might think you've gone mad. They might want to medicate you, all those things. And I create groups for those types of people that are looking for their kindred souls. So I have in my mystery school, there's a year-long course around this book, Synchronicity, where we go through it over a year, and we go through four levels of self-mastery. So it starts with the student, goes to the apprentice, then the adept, and then the mentor. And so if anyone's interested in learning more about, you know, having a group of people to go through this with and really go deeper in their process, or they're just looking for support, you can just reach out to me on my website, which is knowtheself.com. That's knowtheself.com. And there is one in person happening that's going to be announced in 2 days from now up on Mount Shasta. I live in Mount Shasta, California, which is a huge energy vortex on the planet. And I'm taking 12 questers out onto the mountain for 5 days and 4 nights in the first week of August. So if anyone listening wants to meet in person and go through a rebirth and renewal experience, it's kind of a vision quest meets a meditation retreat and a transformational workshop all rolled into one, with delicious food and in a really powerful spot outdoors. So you can learn more about that by going to my website as well.
Mount Shasta is probably one of the coolest vortex places on the planet. So that should be a very exciting experience for sure.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I lived out on the mountain for 3 months last summer, and it changed my life. It was so healing. I had my, you know, my house had burned down. I had a lot of stress in my body after, you know, I was in the house when it burned, and my nervous system needed to like resettle, and I just slept on the earth for almost 3 months. And I felt like all of the fear in my body, all the resettling, the earth just healed me. And there's so many magical moments out there under the stars. So I really want to share that experience with others.
Well, being in a place where, my goodness, the energy is amazing. Oh, fooey. Amaya, thank you so very much. This was a great show. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.